Welcome to the CLT Podcast, a series all about things related to learning and teaching in higher education, brought to you by the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University. In this episode, I'll be catching up with some of our presenters from our recent Developing Excellent Academic Practice Spring Forum, which looked at gameful approaches in higher education. Wherever you may be listening from, we hope you enjoy.
Hi everyone, I'm Jessica Van Horsen. I am a senior lecturer in North American History in the School of Cultural Studies and Humanities at Leeds Beckett.
And hello everyone, I'm Kate Grafton. I am one of the principal lecturers in physiotherapy, but I am also a National Teacher Fellow.
How can games benefit teaching and learning in higher education?
So I don't like the term games. I think, you know, I would never say that I play a game with my students. It may feel like it's a well-known game like Blockbusters or Taskmaster, but actually there's been quite a lot of thought and decision-making around what that's going to add to the session. So I really don't like using PowerPoints. That's not my thing. And my background is obviously physiotherapy, and we use a lot of different approaches with our patients to get them to progress with their rehab. So I kind of brought that approach with me from practice, really. And everything we do is, you know, it is about getting people to engage and to enjoy their rehabilitation, or in our students' case, their learning. So I want our students to enjoy their learning, because I think a lot of school has maybe not as pushed out the joy in learning from them. So I wouldn't say I do games. They are often tasks which I want my students to be able to problem solve, or as we call it, clinical reasoning. So it may look like they're just playing a really nice quiz, or they're filling in a word search, but actually I'm looking for problem solving. I'm looking for their reasoning skills. I'm looking for their ability to communicate. And ultimately, I'm looking for them to be able to put all those skills together to do exactly that when they go out and be a clinician with their patients. So I'm trying to develop them into what they're going to be doing when they qualify, really. Jess, how do you kind of view it?
I think I'm along the same ways as you, Kate, in the way that the label of games or gaming, it can make it seem like it's just silly and just it's not rooted in any pedagogical rationale, when in fact it is. There are real methods to gameplay that are really important for our students' deepened understanding of our fields. And for me, I mostly focus on digital games, video games, and that sort of thing. And while video games do have some issues with regards to, you know, they are fiction, we can't deny that students play them, that this is something that students engage with themselves. So why are we ignoring it? And so I use video games in the classroom to grab that quiet student's attention, to immerse them into something that they do in their pastime, in their education as well. And this really shows them that they're developing critical analysis, counterfactual thinking, methodological thinking. And it's a real fantastic portal for critical analysis. And it's fun. It's not me just talking at them. It's putting the power in their hands for self-directed learning in many ways, with the decisions that they're making along the gameplay, with the choices that they're making, the alliances that they're making. Each of those decisions is learning. And so I see that as really, and there's no shame in having a fun educational experience. And so I think that by combining all of these aspects of gameplay in the classroom, it's a really a cool way of communicating our field and the like.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because in July last year, we were still teaching, obviously everything had moved online. And the students were all talking about how they'd all got the jigsaw puzzles out, and they were doing Cluedo, and they were playing Monopoly, and they'd all gone back to those like retro games because everyone had nothing to do. So, you know, why would we not jump on that bandwagon and try and, you know, look at how am I delivering what I'm doing. The students are doing this. They're telling me they enjoy it. They're telling me they engage in it. If I can put some of my content into something similar, then they're going to kind of enjoy it and engage with it at a time when they were really kind of feeling quite, you know, down and low. And what was making them excited was that. So, you know, coming up with things like Taskmaster and Cluedo and all the things that we did then, I think it helped them to move forward at that time when it was a really difficult time for all of us, really.
Absolutely. I also was thinking that Cluedo, Taskmaster, Call of Duty, these are multi-million pound organizations and products that they're doing something right, clearly. We as educators could maybe learn from them in some way. They're actually engaging a really diverse public in a variety of different ways. And maybe that is kind of something that we should see as an encouragement from us to sort of learn from those practices. What is it about Cluedo that is so captivating after however long it's been in existence? What is it about live action role play video games that makes someone feel immersed in history or in that subject? We can learn from this and incorporate that into our practice to engage students more fully on their level.
And we have been banjaxed, I think, in kind of the gaming, the playful learning kind of people that have been doing it, because we haven't had the research, we haven't had the theory, you know, people haven't been writing about it, but that's changed. There are some, you know, really key and interesting people that are writing about the benefits of playful learning, about gaming, about playful interludes and how we can use these and kind of the theories behind them. So I think now we actually have that basis to be able to go and say, well, actually, look, you know, this is rooted in good practice. There is evidence now. And I think for a long time, we just didn't have that. And people just looked at us and went, well, you're just messing around. It's frivolous. And actually, it really isn't. But now we have that basis to say, actually, do you know what? Look, it isn't frivolous. It's possibly better than what you've been doing, because where's the research for what you've been doing?
No, exactly. I think that's so true. And the research for what we've traditionally been doing is rooted in 19th century practices.
Yeah, and learning, so old. Right?
And we're now in the 21st century, right? That maybe it is time for a shakeup or a reassessment, a reorientation. And I really see that with, you know, embracing the graphic rather than just the textual. I'm not advocating for getting rid of reading and writing, of course, but there are other ways of learning that are now very evident in the 21st century that it's our responsibility to engage with, I think.
When should gameful approaches be used?
Oh, that's a really interesting one, because I think about my subject. So I teach all about intensive care and palliative care and some quite deep and dark subjects. We can get quite serious. So you do have to have some counterpoint to that. You have to have some lightheartedness. It can't all be sad. It's important to do that, obviously, and we do that. But I think you also need to make that learning accessible, and you need to make it so it's not as scary as students perceive it is going to be. So I personally think it, you know, yes, introduce it at the right place and the right time. And as a specialist in your area, you should know which sessions lend themselves to those kind of things. I think revision sessions are excellent for this kind of activity, especially skills revision, you know, pop quizzes. They're all brilliant at that time. We do a fantastic escape room, which is all about using all the knowledge they've developed in their over the module, and they have to put all of that together and actually, you know, get themselves out of an escape room through their clinical reasoning and their problem solving of a proper patient. And that's perfect timing when they've got all that knowledge and they have to put it into practice just before they go out onto placement. So it's that kind of scary moment where they can make a mistake and actually they're not going to kill anybody for us. It's a safe way of practicing all those skills in a non-threatening way, hopefully, when they feel comfortable and they've got to know their team members. on the other side, it's also really good as icebreakers, you know, at the start of something, you know, doing treasure hunts or doing the QR code exercises. You know, all of those kind of things can be brilliant at bringing a disparate group of people together to know each other. And again, in our area, they have to get to know each other really quickly because they're going to be doing some fairly intimate things very, you know, very early on in the course. So we need to break down those barriers, and often games and having a laugh and, you know, interacting with each other is a really great way of doing that for our students.
Absolutely. And I've been thinking of that exact thing, that next year we're faced with a double cohort of students who have never met us or each other. The level fours and level fives will be new to each other, and suddenly we'll be in face-to-face situations, hopefully. And what better way to quickly get to know each other, to break that ice, to find people that you know maybe their names from a seminar on the screen, but through a gameful approach that gets you to be silly, that gets you to relax, that says, you know what, just chill out and just go with it. Just be silly. I really take what you said, Kate, about, you know, when is appropriate to include and these sort of playful interludes or gameful approaches, that not every session will be appropriate. But something that feeds my teaching practice is trying to get students to get to feel in the shoes of the people that we're studying. And through gameful approaches, using video games, for example, Civilization for colonization, students can immerse themselves in colonial history, the history of empire, and what it was like to be an Indigenous person when the British came, and how you would decide to do allyship or to resist and that sort of thing. And I think it's, again, used appropriately and not fully, of course, but to really bring them into that subject matter in a really engaging way, having them make those informed choices rooted in the subject and really adding to their own deepening knowledge of it, I think is just fantastic. And it's just, it just breaks things up. I think students get often very, very much talked at in the lecture theater. And maybe there's an opportunity for us to talk at them less and to work with them more. And perhaps using gameful approaches is one of the ways we can do that.
And I think, you know, you look at things like virtual reality and augmented reality, you know, having virtual hospitals where students can practice how they would interact with someone who's in pain or who is at the end of life. You know, it is a really good forum to do when actually they may not be able to do that in any other way until they get out in practice and are faced with it. So being able to do that in that gaming environment that they're very comfortable with, and we can be really creative with it using kind of choose your own adventure type storyboards, if you like, and they pick the answers. And if they get it wrong, again, they can go back to the beginning and start again. Well, you can't do that with a real life human being. It doesn't kind of work like that. So even in quite serious situations, you can use those approaches really effectively.
Well, I'm sure you've probably seen how it relaxes students as well. They're not testing it out on an 85-year-old woman
exactly.
who's broken her hip for the second time. That this is a safe place and it's a gaming environment. So you can fail and then you just start again and no one gets hurt along the way. And that is fundamental to learning, isn't it? That the ability to fail. And then you can just learn from that experience. And I don't know if we encourage students to fail enough, because that's you can learn quite a bit through that.
I always think, you know, we call it the F word, the fail word, as it were. and that's the best learning opportunity often, you know, because you do. And all the feelings you get from failing are really powerful, really powerful. I would also add, you know, in terms of the online environment, we learned very quickly that doing 3-hour sessions is really hard work, and students and us, we switch off. So doing a playful interlude, something daft, something, you know, that kind of lifts the mood or changes the mood, gets people moving or gets people thinking a little bit differently, can often reignite a session and can kind of bring everybody back. And even those people that might not have joined in with all of the chat, sometimes actually join in with these daft games that you might do for 10 minutes, and they feel like they have been included and you feel like you've included them. So it doesn't have to just all be face-to-face kind of interventions at all.
Absolutely. It's the, I always think about that quiet student who isn't going to unmute themselves on Teams or on Collaborate, and who isn't going to type a comment in the box, but to have some sort of challenge, go and find this in your kitchen, that breaks a barrier. And then they feel included, they feel part of it. And it's just simple, but it does shake things up in a way that creates more of a community, which is very hard to achieve online, for sure. So why wouldn't you have a giggle?
What challenge could you set to our listeners about gameful approaches to teaching and learning?
My challenge is for you to embrace the silly. 10 minutes, devote 10 minutes to the silly in either a lecture or a seminar. You can do a stand-up comedy routine about that topic for that week. You can do a seminar session as a board game. You can do a choose your own adventure lecture where students get to vote up where they want you to go next in that lecture. It will make you feel very exposed, but you will be captivated in the moment, I promise you. Embrace the silly. This spirit of play is infectious. The world is a serious place already. We don't need to perpetuate that seriousness every time we get in front of students. Embrace the silly. Try something new. If it fails, that F word, it's a spectacular failure. We'll learn from it, but maybe students will appreciate you trying something different. Embrace the silly. Kate, what's your advice? What's your challenge?
That's such a hard one to follow. So, all the things I could pick. I'm going to pick something really quite simple. I'm going to suggest you include one playful interlude in your next online session. If you want some inspiration, have a look at Taskmaster, or pick something that is a 2 minute, go and get, go and find me, put something under a mug that everybody can be involved in, and you need to do it too.
Hello there. My name's Ashley Dean, and I'm a senior lecturer in the School of the Arts. And my main courses that I teach on are broadcast media technologies, with a little bit of creative media technology and digital journalism.
How have you included gameful approaches within your teaching this year?
So I'm a really big fan of gameful approaches to teaching. One of the main things that I try and include in my teaching, sort of in every module, is the use of the quiz app called Kahoot, which is a really robust system for generating multiple answer questions that the students are really familiar with. It's used quite a lot in high schools. I'd say 90% of students are familiar with the systems, and those that aren't are very quick to sort of adopt to it. One of the benefits of it, on top of the really sort of slick UI and stuff like that, it's very supportive of the students. This is one of the things I found, in that I think sometimes when you do a test with students that's got sort of outcomes to it, it can be a bit demoralizing for the students that don't do so well on it. But what Kahoot does is it constantly sort of congratulates and encourages the students at their end. So even if you're sort of dead last, it'll say, oh well, you're not so far away from this person, or it will tell you if you've got an answer streak or something like that, a few questions right in a row. What it's also very good at is it generates a lot of data. So it will tell you which questions were difficult for students to answer. It tells you which ones which ones are answered most quickly, that kind of thing. And it's a very easy thing to program, and it's a very easy thing to sort of distribute to the students. So it's quite rich in the way that you can incorporate multimedia. You can have images in there, you can have audio, you can have video as part of your questions. It's very easy to sort of pause and reflect back on those images and things like that. So it's a very useful tool, and it's built for anybody with any kind of level of teaching, really, to create things with. So it's a very very easy thing to work with.
What was the impact of this approach on the students?
So I've seen a very clear impact on the students with the use of Kahoot. It's definitely something that they look forward to. I quite often leave it until the end of a session. So it's like, right, let's finish off with the Kahoot. And so then you can quite easily recap the kind of things you've had in that lesson. And it's what we like to sort of talk about as stealth learning as well. So they don't necessarily think of it as a test at the end of a session or even sort of a bit of teaching. It's just a bit of fun at the end, but it's very, very easy to hide bits of information in there. Or you could just do, I've done sort of like straight up, this, what have you learned in this session, or have you read this email? It's been rather, I think I called it the most boring Kahoot ever, but the students still sort of interacted with it, and were happy to do it because of that competitive element. They love to beat each other. They love to sort of to see who's first or on the podium, and it shows you the top three and stuff like that. It can be kind of an explicit way of getting them to sort of just think about what they've just heard, or it can be something that you can hide little sort of bits and bobs in there that to find out what they've been paying attention to. It's something that they will get engaged with sort of really wholeheartedly, and it's a really good for stirring up debate as well. So like when you do pause in between the questions, it's very easy to say, okay, well, who got this question right, who got this question wrong? Well, because it's multiple choice, you can say, well, why did you choose this question, or which one of you said that this was the right answer, and that kind of thing. And it's a really easy platform to sort of pick around, and we've talked to the students about this. We've done little straw polls about whether they enjoy Kahoot, and my current level fours have unanimously said that they enjoy doing Kahoot, yeah, that they've all got something out of it.
What advice would you give to other teaching staff about gameful approaches to teaching and learning?
For me, gameful approaches are just a really, really good way to get the students to engage in all sorts of different ways. I think it's having that competitive element certainly drives them to sort of pay attention more, and to sort of, if you can preface the gameful kind of sort of activities, if you can say, right, next week we're going to do such and such, like, so next week we're going to do a Kahoot on, I don't know, flags of the world. That's probably not very applicable to many people, but I use it quite a lot in my graphics modules. So next week we're going to be looking at political party logos, that kind of thing. I've done that before, and so they just gives them the emphasis to sort of like look into something a bit beforehand It's a good way to motivate, but also it can really punctuate your sessions. If you've got a load of slides either side of a Kahoot, it can really sort of just break things down nicely. Kahoot in particular is a really easy thing to set up, and a quick thing to set up. So I definitely have benefited a lot from gamifying elements of my teaching in the past. It's got my students on side, I think, sometimes. I think when you sort of sometimes a bit of a battle to get them to engage and to sort of like to look forward to sessions or to to get involved, and it's like gamifying aspects of the teaching has definitely helped with that.
My name is Gaspar Pellison. I'm a lecturer in media studies, and I specialize in queer game studies. So I work at the School of Cultural Studies and Humanities.
How have you included gameful approaches within your teaching this year?
So since I love video games, I use mainstream video games in my teaching. So I sometimes use video games in my lectures as examples, And in one of my modules, I actually ask my students to play games during the modules. But I think the main thing that I did this year is to actually ask my students to create a narrative video games on Twine 2. So I use that as an assessment tool, and students have to create a political video games.
What was the impact of this approach on the students?
So I think mostly the impact was, I won't say enjoyment, but it's like it was mostly, I think it was a bit more motivation from the students. I heard that a lot of, I felt that a lot of them were very, very willing to try and do their best. There's definitely been a lot more engagement than on more like traditional modules. But of course, not everything is perfect. And surprisingly, you will always have students who actually prefer the more conventional ways of teaching. So, or they won't take the games that seriously at first, and they will have to see that you know, really into them and that you really try to make them engage with them. And others will just be, I think won't take them very seriously overall. But it was only a minority.
What advice would you give to other teaching staff about gameful approaches to teaching and learning?
I think, I'd be the first one to obviously push everyone to use video games in their teaching. I think the idea, of course, is to implement things that you first kind of like and have fun with. So if you don't know anything about video games, don't implement video games because it's probably going to show. But most of us play games in one way or another, right? So I didn't know Taskmaster actually from last week. I actually had a, you know, it's a British staple, right? But I don't watch that much TV. So I think if you just implement something, everyone goes to pop quizzes. You can just create a quiz for your students. Games are kind of everywhere. So it's all about implementing something you're a bit familiar with and you think could translate decently in your teaching first, and then you see how it goes, and then you improve it, and basically have fun with it, really. Play with, be creative.
Karen Trem, I'm a senior lecturer in the Leadership, Governance and People Management subject area.
How have you included gameful approaches within your teaching this year?
Specifically, what I want to talk about is the immersive learning that we've been doing. So over the last few years, we have given our HR students, our HR undergraduate students at level 5, the immersive learning experience. Now, what we initially did was very generic, and what I wanted to do was make it specifically an HR experience rather than just an immersive learning experience. So just over a year ago, I started working very closely with Bob Croft to develop a very HR-specific immersive learning activity in which I'd worked with an external organisation and identified an issue with them that we could simulate online without specifically naming them, but I knew it was a real current HR issue. And I was all set to have the organisation come in and listen to the student presentations to make it as real as possible. And then COVID struck. So literally 2 weeks before we were due to go into the Hydra Suite, we had to cancel the lot. This year, I've worked with Bob and with Sujana in the accounting subject area so far to create an online immersive learning activity for her students. And that was quite a different thing to do. Instead of being a full day in the Hydra Suite, which we couldn't do, we split it so that we worked for an hour a week over 8 weeks with a group of students. What I'm about to do over the next few weeks is create a slightly different HR activity for my students, both at H5 and H6. Instead of doing it over an hour a week, I'm going to be doing it for a 4 or 5 hour block in one day. Again, making it very specific to so they can apply their technical learning. But I guess the most important thing that we're giving the students is a chance to develop their employability skills. So all of the additional learning that they get. So they're doing it in the context of developing the technical skills that they will have to use in a real context. But what I'm really interested in, and what we're really interested in, is developing their employability skills through giving them a simulated real activity to work on.
What was the impact of this approach on the students?
That's been interesting, because I guess it was a major challenge for us to put the whole thing online. And when we worked with the accounting students, working online was still very new to them. So we were getting them to use Blackboard Collaborate and Google Drive and things. And actually, it was the first time for them to do it, but it was also the first time that we'd done it. So it was a big learning experience for everybody. Some of the feedback that the students gave at the end of it was really, really positive. It would have been nice to have more students engaged with it, but we very deliberately made it outside of the curriculum. So it's not assessed as part of any module. It's students who want to participate. But the feedback that they gave at the end of it was very positive in terms of the additional skills they'd learned, the chance to do something different, the ability to see how their technical skills would be used in a real situation. And there was also some useful feedback. You know, let's not pretend that all feedback is always positive. Well, there was lots of good positive feedback. Students appreciate it when they're working with a group of people who participate and want to work. And some of the groups were less functional than others. I guess what that's taught us is that the ability to reflect on the learning, whether the experience was ideal or not, is a critical part of it. And I think in the future we'll be doing more of that reflective learning at the end of it. But it has been a very powerful learning experience for the students and also for us.
What advice would you give to other teaching staff about gameful approaches to teaching and learning?
My advice would absolutely be embrace it. Immersive learning is not the only playful learning that I've done. I hadn't really considered it sort of playful learning, because in the past I've used Kahoot and get the students to design and work through assessment centres and things like that. And what I've found is that engaging them in a slightly different way, or getting them involved in something which simulates reality, is very motivating for them. It allows them to develop a whole range of additional skills. And it also allows us as teaching staff to, one, be creative. You've got to constantly be one step ahead. So you can't give students realistic experiences if you're out of touch with what reality is. So it means you can't sort of just sit in an academic ivory tower and, yeah, you've got to be out there and networking and in touch with stuff. So it's, I think, incredibly useful for the students and for us. We were a little bit wary at the beginning of this year as to whether the immersive learning activity would work as well online as it does in the immersive learning suite. Having experienced it thus far, I actually wouldn't want to go back into the immersive learning suite, simply because that limits the number of people that you can have at any one time in the learning experience to something like 20 or 24. Whereas online, we've got the capacity to make this as big as we want to make it. And we, to be honest, we, those of us currently working on it, would love to see more people getting involved in it. We've created kind of fictitious shell organisations that we can keep building on the characters and the objectives and the strategy for the businesses and the issues and that the client businesses have. So there's some great opportunity for creativity in there. What we want to do next academic year is get the accounting and the HR students together. So not only can they see the impact of their decisions on a business, but they can see the impact of their decisions on other parts of the business, because they've got somebody who understands, you know, the people management students will get a better insight into finance by working with accounting students and vice versa. And I'd love to see marketing and general business students in there as well. So I think I know that nothing is sustainable if there's too few people working on it. So what I'd really like to see is this kind of growing some real legs and a life of its own. So it shifts from being a subject area thing to being an extracurricular opportunity to develop some really powerful employability skills with another module following it, which looks at reflection, so that you identify, so that the students can identify the transferable skills that they've gained from it. So that was a very long answer to your question, but my advice would be absolutely embrace all opportunities to learn in a non-standard way. I listened to a webinar recently with Gary Kasparov, and one of the things he said was, if you brought back somebody in a time machine from 100 years ago, the only thing they would recognize about life then and life now is education, because too much of it is focused on just giving people knowledge and regurgitating that knowledge. What we should be doing is working with people to develop their behaviors. You can get knowledge from Dr. Google any day you want. What you can't do is act with confidence and with the appropriate behaviors. And I absolutely, that was music to my ears, because that's kind of what I believe education should be. And I see immersive learning and gameful approaches as absolutely working on behaviors, as long as we reflect on it afterwards.
Listen to more in our podcast series, click on the subscribe button. And to keep up to date with the Centre for Learning and Teaching at Leeds Beckett University, follow us on Twitter @LeedsBeckettCLT. Thank you for tuning in.